I'm your host for this day, and just wanted to introduce you to this next section. We're going to be spending time together before dinner, and then a little bit after dinner as well as part of the one keynote. Now, who here has heard of Logostore before? Show of hands. Quite a few. For those who haven't, have you heard of max7.org? Yeah? Okay. I was talking with Libby a little bit earlier, and she's brought with her a team from Logostore. She would describe Logostore as an enabler, a facilitator, a lover of all things to do with children's ministry. There's about eight on team. They're based in Hornsby, just north of here. The organization, I guess, has been going for about 24 years. And they've had an opportunity to be able to partner with local churches, local ministries, to be able to engage, to be able to encourage, to be able to facilitate what they do, especially where those resources are not all that easy to come by. It's taken them to local churches here in Australia, but also internationally. In fact, recently, Libby was saying she was in Siberia, and an opportunity there to minister into some of the congregations who understand that the opportunity for people to come in and bring Christian ministry from outside, that door is closing. But also from the cold to the very warm, over in Uganda, and working with... who has seen the film Queen of Katwe? Anybody seen the chess film? Couple of people, excellent. I had a date night with my wife a few months ago and watched it. Brilliant film. Maybe after this you'll all go and see it. But working with some of the chess people there in a writing workshop and a whole variety of different things that they're doing to facilitate and encourage. So passionate about all things to do with kids ministry and facilitating and encouraging and supporting them. And today we are privileged to have them with us, looking at the concept of empowering children. What does it mean to empower children and to help them in that space? So without any further ado, let me introduce Libby, and she will introduce the rest of the team. Thank you, Libby.
Thanks, David. Woohoo! It's so exciting to be here. I'm a bit pumped. Because I came 2 years ago and just on my own, well, and Janie, and we facilitated a short, you know, elective session, but I just soaked it all up and was just so, went back so well fed from Leaders to Go. And actually a lot of ministry stuff happened after that that I brought from here. And I said to the Logostore team, we've just got to down tools in 2 years' time and we've all just got to come because we need to be fed and refreshed, and kept on thinking of that idea of the well and getting that life-giving water. And look, how did they know? Must be Jesus or something. So I'm Libby, and with me we've got Simon, we've got Roy, we've got Janie, and also, though not speaking up the front, we've got Jared and Liz, and then a little bit later on, James, our operations manager, will come. Tonight, Fraser will come. So if you recognise or see those names, you come and say hi, and you can talk more about the kinds of things we do. So a lot of our ministry, well, most of our ministry is overseas. We do equipping, resourcing, training, working alongside, as David already said, those who are working with children and families, and we're really passionate about that. And we're also just love working and partnering and networking with large networks. So we're involved in international sports movement. We helped start a global children's forum. So we love big stuff, and we just love working with people who are just on the ground as well. So we're looking at the topic of empowering children, and we've been actually wrestling with this topic and listening and talking. We've been invited a couple of times to talk about this. I just want you to know that you're not going to get all the answers today. Sorry about that. We're not necessarily the experts that have it all sewn up. But actually, our job today as Logostore, as a group of people that love you and love Jesus, is we want to just start the conversation. So we're going to start the conversation about this, and we're going to create a safe space for all of you to feel like you can really wrestle with the issues, because there's going to be some stuff you're going to go, I don't like that about powering children, or I feel a bit weird about that, or but what about this? This is the space where we get to talk, discuss, wrestle. And in fact, what we can do is we're going to bring perspectives from the global church, because we do a lot of travel. You've just heard about Siberia, Uganda, we've been to many other places, and so we're seeing and hearing what others are doing around the world. So we're going to bring that to the table today. And what you're going to bring is your local, what you guys are doing here in your denominations, in your leading of leaders, in your local churches. So we're going to bring that together. So there'll be a little bit of sitting and listening, but not a lot. We're going to be doing it together. We're going to look at, in this first hour and a half, so we've got an hour after dinner, this hour and a half, we're going to look at, got to work out how to do this. Hang on. Okay, now it's not playing for me anymore, Terry. I don't have the stripe anymore, and I can't, oh no, now it's giving me a red note. Anyway, okay, once Terry, I did break it, sorry, I don't know why. Oh, okay. So we're going to look at four things. What's happening now? So we're going to talk about together. What's going on? Ooh, look there. What's happening now in our churches, in our schools, in our local communities around empowering children? What does it look like? So we want to talk about that. Then we're going to say why. Why are we going to empower children? And actually, what do we actually mean by that? What are we meaning? Are we making mini adults? Are we expecting them to stand up and preach? Awkward. Like, or are we wanting kids to be what they're great at? Kids. And what does that look like? How can they be a disciple maker, which is all of our jobs? Because I just realized we're at Leaders to Go. And I think you're going to hear a bit this afternoon about what we should be doing by going and, Jesus said, go and make disciples. So there's going to be a bit of that. We're going to be looking at that disciple-making process, looking at the biblical understanding of that. What is the disciple-making process? This go and make disciples, and what does that look like for kids? And then we're going to, again, having got the process about disciple making, what does that look like in our context? And where can children be connected in with that? What does that look like? So that's what we're going to cover, and Roy's taking over now.
Do I need to use the mic? Can you? Oh, we're recording it. Oh. I guess the answer is yes. Let me just pray for us, eh? Lord, I pray that you'd open our minds and our hearts this afternoon. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, I want you to put your pens out of your hands, and I want you to close one eye, put two hands out in front of you with your pointer fingers, and bring your hands in a little bit. One eye open, one eye closed. And without sort of anything but just bring one finger down onto the other. See if you can do it. Who did it first time? Probably, yeah. Those who are under 30 did it. Try it now with two eyes. How easy was that? Yeah, really easy. And I guess this afternoon we're just going to try and get a stereoscopic view of things. We're trying to see things that we haven't seen before. And hopefully the tools that we give you are going to help you do that this afternoon. I just want six volunteers to stand up. Quickly, six volunteers. Jump up, stand up, and come out the front here. You see some numbers on the floor. There's two, three, four. Come on, two more. Be brave. Great. Seven. That's brilliant. No, come up. That's right. Now, what I want you to do is to think of the screen time of 12-year-olds using phones, computers, iPads. How many hours a week do you think, on average? So you can stand anywhere on this continuum. How many hours a week? How many hours a week? Fantastic. Have we got the slide there? Okay. Okay, screen time. Now, no one was over here. and everyone's here. In fact, we're not going to be able to use it. 30% of their waking hours is spent in front of a screen. Outside school. So this is outside school. And that's 25 hours, 24 hours. So 3 hours every weeknight and then 4 hours every day on the weekend. Okay. I want you to move now. Think now of your church. And think, and everyone in the room do this, how much intentional spiritual formation would happen in your church for children, for an average child? So move to your spot. No, not on screens. Forget about screens. Spiritual formation of saying, this is, we're intentionally discipling our kids. How much? Yeah, on church. It could be a Friday club as well. And it could think of all the for an average child. Okay. What are we seeing here? Yeah. We're in a contest. We're in a where's the Terry's taking it. All right. Now, could I have a different group of parents? So if you guys sit down, people who have young ones at home, anyone from 5 to 10 year olds at home? Anyone here? Stand up. You have 5 to 10 year old children. Stand on the timeline. How much time you would give to spiritual formation, to discipling them? Stand on the per week. Yeah, to your children. Yeah. Hours, yeah. It is, yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of training that happens that is about their formation. But still, most of you are standing down this end, and over here was their screen time. So I just wanted to just make a really, really basic point. Yeah, great question. Okay, yeah. Okay. Really helpful. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Give them a great big hand. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, about the same time. Yeah. Really interesting. But we are in a contested space, aren't we? With influencing the hearts and minds of our children. And this afternoon, we're just creating a safe space to think, how do we make disciples who multiply? How do we make, disciple-making disciples? Because that's what Jesus did. And so that's our challenge. Lib.
Great. So what we want to know is what's happening right now. In how we're making disciple makers of our children who are with us. They might be our own children. They might be children we come across in schools, community, church. So I'm going to put you into groups. This may not be the group that you're kind of ministering in, but you can just take on the mantle, unless you really object, in which case move. I'm going to break you into four groups because what I want you to do, and maybe if you're someone who just really needs to get it clear what you're doing, write this down. I want you to start by listing the types of things that you're already doing in this space to make disciples of kids. So what are the things you're already doing to help making disciples of the children? So we've got four groups, so it's quite a few of us. Okay, so from about there, so I'm sort of splitting you, Justin, you're on that side. You guys are going to be church. So what's happening?
About that.
We're
Good, yes. Okay. It's about priority, not about lack of time necessarily. Yes, somebody else? Beware. Yeah. 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 Are kids able to identify in someone and say, I want to be like them as they follow Jesus? Yeah, Terry. Yeah. Boom, boom. Yep. Yeah, thanks, Terry. Good. Yeah, quick, a few more. Yep.
We're wrestling with the idea of what happens with children in church and whether they have opportunity to adapt to the side or out in another room versus making the disciples at the feet of the top to the most important role of them.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, great. Thank you. Others? Yes.
Something about a lack of shared understanding and articulation of what the discipleship actually means.
Good. Yeah, thank you. And we hope to address that a bit this afternoon. Yeah.
Relevance.
Yeah. Yeah. So as Libby said, we're starting or really continuing a conversation through the week, and all the sessions will add to this conversation about what are the challenges we're facing of making passionate followers of Jesus who want to multiply themselves. And this whole week is going to be doing that. And here we see we want to be very good at this end of the basics, but we also want to stretch ourselves out here to those, wow, I never thought of that. And so please be bold to share your ideas and to innovate in this area too. Thanks, Simon.
My job is to... Oh, it works. Is to answer the question, why empower children? And I look around the room here and see so many of my heroes, people that are doing remarkable things, and in a way we need to learn this together. And I wonder, just very quickly, I was 12 years of age when I was first encouraged to do ministry, to teach Sunday school. And I went to a church that was very creative, and they said, after we'd been through Sunday school, what are you going to do to serve? And I'm interested, I'm going to count up from one. What age was it when you first understood that you were doing something with Jesus for his kingdom? That you were I mean, you might not have fully understood it, but when did you get involved in leadership or ministry or service, okay? I'm going to count up from one. So when I get to the age that you were, then stand up, okay? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12. I'm going to stop there. Look at that. That's got to be about half the room. Is that right? About half the room started to get involved in ministry by the age of 12. Isn't that interesting? 13? 14? 15? 16? 17? 18? 19? 20? 20 to 25? More than 25. Okay. Phew, you're in. Okay, you can sit down. Isn't that amazing? I would hazard a guess that you're sitting here in this room today because that was your experience. It certainly is for me. As a 12-year-old, I got passionate about not just learning about Jesus, but telling other people about Jesus. It was a huge change. And you know as well as I do that it's actually once you start teaching others or sharing the gospel with others or even being an administrator and helping serve a program or helping do the music. It's as you're helping others that you learn so much more yourself. Is that right? It's amazing. And so I think we've got a room full of children's leaders here who have been serving Jesus for a long time, probably because you started at a very early age. These are my two boys. I didn't plan to become a dad at 50. I'd been doing children's ministry for almost 40 years, and then finally God gave me and Penny two little boys. And so I kind of look at this whole area through two different lenses now. I had 38 years where I told everyone else how to do it. And now I'm discovering it's actually really difficult. So the lens that I'm wearing at the moment, is that blurry-eyed. I didn't have enough sleep last night, and my boys are so energetic, and I'm exhausted. Funny story though, Sammy, when we've lived in Dubai for 6 years, and I've just moved back to Australia. So I'm still trying to re-engage with Australia and understand Australia. But early on in kindergarten, Sammy came home and said, "We're doing the cross-country." And he looked so upset. And I said, "That's fantastic. You're really good at running. You're Ethiopian of all, you know, and it's cross-country." And Sammy said, "I don't want to go to another country." Poor little fella. It's got nothing to do with the talk. But anyway, it's a funny story. But suddenly, when you look at it through the eyes of a parent, you suddenly see some of these things very differently. And wrestling with the idea of what does it mean to empower children? What does it mean to empower our little Joshy, who's 3 years of age, and Sammy, who's 5 years of age? How do I empower them as a disciple of Jesus? And it's a big question, especially when I look at this long list here. But I guess what I'm wrestling with is the fact that when we talk about empowering children, we're actually trying to learn from Jesus, who was about empowering everybody. When Jesus said, "Go and make disciples of all nations," he said a few different alls. He said, "Go to all nations. I will be with you always. God has given me all authority." So you can go knowing that I have all authority. And there's an assumption of a fourth all in that Matthew 28 passage. It's not there, but it's a fairly reasonable assumption, is that all of you are meant to be doing this. And as we think about empowering children, we've got to realize that actually we're not empowering adults either. And we're not empowering teenagers either. We have a very passive understanding of church. And I think there's so many things we could explore about that, but we think about even some of the minor differences between Jesus' time and ours. So when Jesus went to the synagogue, they sat in a circle. And then soon afterwards, the Greek model was sitting in rows. And then for 2,000 years, we've then sat in rows. And we've kind of said there's an expert at the front who knows everybody, everything. And we're there to learn at the foot of the expert. But was that Jesus' model? I don't think so. Isn't that amazing? Think for a second. The God of the universe came as a child. He brought a group of 12 unknown young men around him, and then there were women and others around that. And for 3 years, he engaged them in everything he was doing. And we'll hear a story in a moment where he sent them out to do some extraordinary things. But he was living with them day to day. He was doing stuff together. He was modeling it. He said, "You'll do greater things than this." And then after 3 years, he left. What an amazing model of discipling and leadership that Jesus would teach, involve, model, show, tell stories, do miracles, do all those things, and then leave after 3 years and say, "Go for it. Go and change the world." That's Jesus' model. And unfortunately, we've inherited some very challenging things, I think, in our church. I'm not criticizing the church. It's Jesus' body here on earth. But we do have some challenging things to overcome if we're wanting to empower children and teenagers and adults as we try and fit within our existing structures and understanding of church. Anyway, we're going to do an activity. I need 8 people who don't know how to spell litigation. Okay. 8 people. 8 people in a chair. Come on. It's all right. This won't hurt that much. I mean, it won't hurt at all. 8 people. Come on.
I'll be a volunteer.
But if you've got a bad back, don't come up. Eight people in a chair. Yeah, that's right. You can sit on the chair. All right, now squeeze in closer. You guys are the winners. You are going to love this.
I want you to face in a clockwise direction.
Leave your chair as it is and swivel around. I'm just doing this for the those that are listening on radio.
Okay. And what I want you to do is to lie back so that your shoulders are on the knees of the person in front like that. So make sure you're stable on both knees.
Squash you in a little bit.
So, can I have some people to help me take out some chairs? I'll take lifts first.
Take one.
Bring your
palm
up a bit, that's right. Can a few more people help us here?
Whoa. Take one over there. This is really happening, ladies and gentlemen. There are no tricks. There are no wires on the roof. Whoa!
We'll have to get to the YouTube clip to find out how to get off
this. Yeah, we did. All right, who liked the game more, those that were in it or those watching? Those that were in it, Brendan, how did that feel? What were you? What was it like, the experience? Just take us through the journey quickly of... Interesting. Who was surprised by it? I was. I'd never seen it before. Well, how did you feel when you finally got to the point where there's no chairs at all, those that were in it? Phil, what was that like? You want to analyze it? Yeah, fair enough. Now, turn to the person next to you. How is that like what Jesus did when he discipled his disciples? Okay? Turn to the person next to you. How is that like Jesus' discipling model? Someone from this room, who'd like to just share one idea? Jerry. They were able to keep going. Okay. What about someone from this area? Want to add something to that? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Okay. Someone from here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
How do we get out of here? Who knows?
Yeah. Anyone want to add anything from here? Okay. Kind of squeeze the Holy Spirit in. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's interesting. And different gifts. Yeah, that's right, Phil. So they get to. Yeah. 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 Not all at once. Yeah. Yeah.
The fact that you were like Jesus, you were confident that makes
Yeah, that was Roy. That was. I wasn't so confident. Look, YouTube is a wonderful thing, all right? So. Give it a go, yeah. 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 That's good. Okay, so, I mean, oh, yeah, maybe one more. What? And it takes courage to step up. Thank you to those eight that did step up. Because actually empowering a child or a teenager or an adult involves somebody stepping out and being uncomfortable. And I think we need to realise that. Interestingly, coming back to Australia after 6 years, you suddenly realise the culture has shifted very quickly. And you know what I'm talking about in terms of some of the discussions that are happening that, I mean, 6 years ago, none of those things were being discussed. And so suddenly you have a situation where our young people are starting to feel a little bit of persecution that maybe we didn't. I mean, we felt a tiny bit of ridicule maybe when we were growing up, but it's been ramped up a little bit. So the sense of what it means to be a disciple and a follower of Jesus and being empowered is getting more and more like the New Testament, where you actually have to step out and be counted. So it's just a great example, but the concept of scaffolding is a really helpful one as we think about that continuum, especially, sorry it's not here, but you have to imagine it, but especially as you move up towards this end, the idea of saying, what does it mean to share the gospel? What does it mean to do mission trips? What does it mean to actually put our faith in action? We can't expect our children necessarily to just step out and know how to do it. We need to be doing it ourselves. We need to be the ones there providing the chairs, the support, the scaffolding, so that over time those pieces of scaffolding disappear and the building can stand up. If you think about learning how to read, so Sammy's learning how to read at the moment. He's 5 years of age and he has a whole lot of words from his kindergarten teacher, and every night we read home readers and we look at his golden words and his green words and his blue words, and slowly he kind of picks up a word, and then when we're reading other books he'll go, oh, there's a golden word, I know that one. And slowly you can see he can't read fluently yet, but you can see that slowly things are slotting into place and the whole concept of reading starts to make sense as words fall into place. And so reading is definitely a scaffolding where at the moment Penny and I have to read with him and help him. But over time, he will be able to do that on his own. And ministry is like that. But it comes back to that question of, well, what are we aiming at anyway? Are we trying to replicate what we've seen over many generations of adults who are passive in the church? I think it's true across most churches that 10 to 20% of people do 80 to 90% of the work. So what's happening with the other 80%? What are they doing? How are they involved? So in a sense, our children and our young people work needs to model a different way of doing church if we're going to follow what Jesus taught us. And I think that's a very important thing. And it's quite telling. And you need to know these verses as well as I do. But in Matthew 18, it struck me again last week as I was sharing at something that Matthew 18, Jesus takes a child and puts them in the midst to explain what the kingdom of God is like. And he says, look at a child. The kingdom belongs to such as these. And then he also says those amazing words of, anyone who welcomes a child welcomes me. Now, these are just words that we know so easily. But when you understand Jewish culture and you realize that there's like seven different layers of men, and then there's women, and then children are way down there, for Jesus to suddenly turn that whole thing upside down and say, no, you know what? Children are actually valuable to God. Children are valuable to the kingdom. Children are part of everything that I'm doing here on earth. Children are part of God's plan here on earth. Then suddenly you see those simple words are turning a world upside down. And I think it's time for us as well, as we think about empowering children, that we begin we're willing to help turn our churches upside down from the bottom up and start to explore what it means to be a disciple of Jesus and what it means to achieve the Great Commission through our children. And Jesus certainly modeled it. But then in Matthew 19, just one chapter later, when the parents are bringing children to Jesus, and of course the disciples stop them. So they haven't even learned that lesson. And sadly, we haven't learned that lesson across the world. But slowly things are changing, and we need to be aware of it. All right, I'll finish with some mathematics. Oh, no, that's me. No, that's boring. All right, I'll finish with some mathematics, okay? First up, Jack and Jenny, they work together to preach the gospel to a large crowds every night, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and every night 1,000 people come to Christ and are followed up. Woo! That's exciting, isn't it? Oh, it's hard work. Good on Jack and Jenny. They're awesome. But I have two other friends here, Fahid and Sona. They've each committed to discipling one person per year. That person is then encouraged to disciple one person per year too, and the cycle continues. Two very simple models, and obviously this is simplistic, but it's interesting. How long would it take to reach every person in the world through those different models? Well, I can tell you, Jack and Jenny, they're going to be a bit old, but it'd take them 19,178 years to reach 7 billion people. And of course, by then, there'd probably be more. So that'd take a long time. How long will Fahid and Sona succeed? If they continue and that cycle continues, it would take them 33 years. It's true. If my maths were correct. No, I did check it. I checked it. This is Jesus' model. That one, actually. And it's amazing in a way, because suddenly it makes sense when you realize why Jesus so often said, "Don't tell anyone about me." And why he started to keep away from crowds, because he was focused on a small number of people. He was empowering a small number of disciples, and he knew that the world could be changed by his simple model of discipling and discipling and discipling. And it's a big challenge, I think, to us. And as we think about reaching children and empowering children, we need to realize that ultimately, it's not that complicated. And we see some pretty amazing things out this end. And I don't know how far up that continuum you're willing to go. And we could add a whole lot more. There are some horrific things that have happened in the name of empowering children. Even back as early as the 13th century, there was a children's crusade. Or is it 11th century? Anyway, 1212. Forgotten which way it goes. But in 1212, there was a children's crusade that came out of Germany, and there were supposedly 30,000 followers that followed a young shepherd boy who was quite fervent in his faith, and he had a dream and he was following what God wanted him to do, and he led this amazing children's crusade. But they were led astray, and they were given passage on ships. They were trying to get to Jerusalem like the other crusades, but they were caught by some horrific people and sold into slavery, and the whole thing went very horrible. And there's various accounts of that. So you have some horrific situations. I've even been at conferences around the world where I kind of shake my head and go, I really don't think children should be doing that. And so there are some things up this end of the continuum where you might not feel comfortable about. And yet, for all of us, there'll be some where we're going, okay, I do that, but I could just do a little bit more. Or maybe I'm very good at teaching the Bible, but how could I help those children to help teach the Bible to some other younger people? And even in my church here in Sydney, we're wrestling with that because they're not really involving teenagers in leadership. And so we had a meeting last week just talking about, because I realized that they're way back down here, and trying to explain things up there just don't make any sense at all. But in many cases, you're saying, well, how can I make just a little bit of a step this way, where I'm helping children just get a little bit more involved, hoping that we can slowly empower more and more and more. So I hope that challenges you. That's some of the reasons why we might consider empowering children.
So we've had a quick look at the situation and that it's a contested space, and then Si's just looked at what it means to equip children just, you know, as a first step and why to do it. And Si mentioned the Great Commission in Matthew 28 as, you know, the big Jesus commissioning his 12 disciples, his 11 disciples, to go and make other disciples. And we're part of that journey. Paul was part of it. And all the way through, we've had... I really loved how Rob started today and reminded us to remember who was in that discipleship chain for us. Who helped us find Jesus? Because someone showed them, and someone showed them. Very few people just open the Bible and go, you know, ding, you know. And so, but beforehand, in Matthew 10 and also Luke 9 and 10, we see Jesus giving a pattern for how he would send his disciples out to make disciples, to be part of what he's doing. So he's already had a year or so of teaching him and showing and modelling. And then he says, go on, have a go. I'm going to give you my authority and you can go and have a go. And so this next section, that we're going to give you a lens through which you can think about disciple making in your church. And it's taken from these parts of Scripture where Jesus sends his disciples out to go. The little commission, if you like, go where I'm about to go. And so Jane and Lib are going to take you through that.
Thanks, Roy. Can I get everyone just to, if you're in the back part of the circle, just stay where you are, and everyone who's kind of feeling like you twisted around a bit, let's just rearrange the chairs a little bit, keep your post-it notes preserved, probably want to photograph those before we destroy it. But what we want to do is just organise the chairs so you're comfortable. Push them back just a tiny bit and then get everyone to step into this space, because what we want to do, we're going to get a big blankie out. It's big. It's square. We want you to at least have a finger on it. There it is. So just come and, you know, we'll just get four people, one on each corner. And then if you can get a hand on it, there's, you know, there's probably room. And if there's not, just see how you go making some room. Oh, look, someone's going to sleep already. That's nice. Okay, so this is going to help us think about the lens that Roy was referring to for the disciple-making process. I'll take those for you, Liv.
All right. Over to you. Okay, so if you have, if you look at Matthew chapter 10, if you look at Luke chapter 9, Luke chapter 10, that's where Jesus sends his disciples out, sort of two different occasions. And Matthew 9, verse 38 says, ask the Lord of the harvest to send workers into the harvest field. So prayer is the number one thing, you know. That's, we talked about, a lovely sister talked about the Holy Spirit, you did, talked about the Holy Spirit, and he's the one that brings people to the Lord. And so prayer is like the one thing we've got to do. Jesus said, ask your Father to send the workers, because the harvest field's ready, but you've got to ask the Father to send workers. And also we've got to be aware of the spiritual warfare that we're in, right? Let's not be, you know, naive about that. You read in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, about the armor of God. We've got to pray on our armor. We've got to... Luke, 1 Peter, I remember 1 Peter 6, 1 Peter 5, sorry, 8 to 10, that talks about, again, what we're doing. You're going like lambs amongst wolves. So there's a lot of talk in the Bible, obviously in the New Testament, about what we're going into, that we're in spiritual warfare and we need to be really spiritually equipped. And how do you do that? Well, that's through prayer. So that's the first thing we want to do. The next thing is Jesus said in Luke chapter 10, verse 1, he said, after this, the Lord appointed 72 others And he sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. So he basically sent them out to kind of prepare the towns that he was going to be going into. So, and what were they actually doing then, do you think? What were those people doing, with those disciples, when they went into the towns? What do you think was going on? What's kind of like the principle behind what they were doing, do you reckon? Preparing. What was that? Sowing the seeds, yep. Yep. How did they do that? Yeah, building relationships, meeting people. So they were connecting. They were connecting with people in these towns, complete strangers, but going into the towns ahead of Jesus. So keep it on the corner if you can. Keep that on your corner. Sorry? Put some tucker on, yep. Eat with people, got to know people, connected with people in those towns before Jesus came. And so if we're thinking about steps for disciple making, that's what we've got to do first. We've got to connect with people. We've got to meet people in order to share Jesus with them. And where could children, for example, connect, do you think? What sort of spaces and places? At school, yeah, where else? Sport, yeah, where else? Neighbourhood, clubs, parties, online games, but yes. Sorry? In their families? Because not all kids come from Christian families, do they? Yeah, okay, next.
I love this next principle from the disciple-making process. And Lib, you can take the cards and, you know, hide them from... Well, no, you don't need to hide them from anyone. We're going to put it out. So the next section of a principle for the disciple-making process is finding... Sorry, do I need to stand up so I can make some eye contact? Hello, 5'1". So this is about finding the good soil. And this is something that completely blew my mind when I thought about it. I just thought you just had to go through the hard soil as well. And you do. But also finding people of peace is this really fascinating principle. How do we help children to be people of peace in their families if they're not Christian, or in their schools if they're in a state school? But how do we help them identify a person of peace? Well, what does a person of peace look like? They're someone who's already asking questions, who's already interested, who's picked up the Bible, or who's come up to a kid who's shared the gospel and said, "Can you tell me more?" And actually, I bought three other friends who are curious as well. That's a person of peace. And so we need to start thinking about these ideas together and identifying where it's already happening. And if you want to look up some more, I have to read the passages because I'm really bad at numbers. So John 6, 44 to 45 is one. And then there's in Luke 10, verse 6, and Matthew 10, verse 11. It's about finding those people of peace. And then the next principle is like discovering. Now, some of this stuff we do first with our kids. We have them to programs, we connect with them straight away, and then we discover together. And discovering might be finding out who Jesus is, showing who Jesus is, looking at the Bible together, seeing videos together, just telling a story about what we've heard from Sunday school. Who here's just heard stories of kids who just randomly just start sharing with their friends about what they've learned? I mean, it's huge. It's so encouraging for us, isn't it, when kids are doing that and they're seeing that. And then the last one is multiplying. So this is another different principle. And this is what Simon was talking about with the maths of disciple making, that you can't just go for one. You want to go for one who's going to go for another one, who's going to go for another one. And so this is about helping kids not only to share what they know, but to have the tools and the courage and the support from us so that they can go tell another one, go equip another one, go disciple another one. And so this strategy is like about building communities of kids who share. And this is happening around the world. And it does happen in Australia. There are kids who are doing that, right? I can see lots and lots of nodding. It's very encouraging and exciting. But what happens if one of the corners go down? Like sometimes we don't find people of peace. Sometimes we connect with a great program and we talk a lot about what the Bible says. So if we drop that corner, what do we lose? Can you just let go of that corner, people, and just take a little step back? So what happens to the disciple-making process when we are not we're not finding a person of peace. Can you just imagine for me, what would that be like if you're not finding a person of peace? Thoughts? It could be stalled, yeah? It doesn't quite work as well. What are you losing when you're not finding a person of peace? You're not finding support? What about the disciples who brought their brothers to Jesus and said, hey, meet this guy? You're not getting that early multiplication. You're not getting that enthusiasm. And what if we drop a quip? What if we don't teach kids what they can do next? What if we just drop that out of the process and break someone's head? Sorry, Carolyn. Yeah, people get lost. And there are people stuck under the blanket who are wondering where I stored it. I don't think the dog slept on it. So what happens when we lose that equipping and helping kids to multiply? What have we lost? There's not an ability to keep going. They stagnate. What else do we not have? Oh no, we can't discover the Bible either. Yeah. The leaders get older and older. That's true. Yep, so the leaders get older and older, and also the things that we understand about making disciples get lost. I don't know how many years I asked people, you know, what does making a disciple look like? What does it look like to mentor someone else, because I don't know what to do? And no one could tell me because they'd never seen it. And this is what you lose. You lose history, you lose passing on story, and you lose passing on information. Okay. So let's make some disciple-making practical. We can put that down. Scooch back to chairs. Is that right?
Yeah, well, actually, what I want you to do, just to be really annoying, is I want you to go into your home groups. So, and I'll just tell you where to meet. Just, you know, it's hard. Okay, so drenched. So drenched, you're here. Soaked, you're here. In terms of empowering children as disciple-makers now, we have asked the question with Simon about why empower children, and we've looked at scaffolding and what it means to scaffold children as disciple makers. Then we've actually looked at the disciple making process, the one that Jesus showed us how to do. And now what we've done is we've practically looked at those steps and said, okay, how could that work with children where I am? So later on tonight you're going to hear some more stories of what people around the world are doing in this space. And then you're going to do some more brainstorming together and more ideas and imagining and dreaming. And I want to tell you about friends in Siberia. And Siberia is a massive place in Russia, in a place called Kemerov. And there the pastor Igor is convinced that children are a real key to bringing the kingdom. And so right from the start, he has always seen children as co-workers with him in the harvest field. And they just do everything together as a church. So I was actually there when they took that photo. They, at the end of church, they say, okay, where's the team that goes out to the street team that go to the homeless? So they gathered to have their photo. And so I don't know if you can see in the lights there, but there's a real mix of ages. So we've got some elderly there, we've got some young adults, we've got sort of parent age, and we've got children. And then there on the left that's a group of them. They've gone out to the streets. That's what it was like when I was there, pretty cold, and they're serving hot drinks. And I say, what do the kids do? And they're like, oh, well, you know, they go and have a chat to them, and they say, why are you here? Why are you homeless? They find out a bit of information. They pray for them. Sometimes the kids preach, tell them about Jesus and say that, you know, there's hope and life. But they do it in teams with adults. And that really amazed me. And I talked to the pastor about that. And so they're quite intentional. Every summer they have special camps for their kids where they train their kids in in prayer and in opening the Bible and in sharing their what they're learning, sharing their faith. And they give them real tools. They find out what their spiritual gifts are, and they prepare them for mission. And they start by, you know, no child's ever made to do this, but they're, you know, asked if they want to become part of a team, and so kids can choose what teams they go on, working with the homeless or whatever else. And once kids have done that, then they're given the opportunity to do a mission trip if they want to. So he's had as young as 4-year-olds and going without their parent, which is a bit like, oh my goodness, can't even imagine that. But this particular child was just so keen, and you know, obviously they're talking and working with the parents, working out what's possible, who they'd go with. But so they've taken teams to, in this picture you can see in Uganda, and then I'm trying to think, that's Cambodia or Myanmar. Can't remember, but they've been to both those places. I think that's Cambodia. So again, they'll take a mixed team of, from, you know, young children to adults, and they're all involved in the mission, in praying and sharing Jesus with those they go to. And that's just how they do life. And lovely young pastors, they've just moved from Kemerov, and then moved to the city of Novosibirsk, and he and his wife are the children's pastors of that church, and now they're studying, they're doing a church plant in Novosibirsk, and they've got young boys, and he was telling us how when they got to the city and they'd been there a few weeks, his son started saying, well, when are we going to go out to the homeless? Like, come on, let's get on with this kind of thing. And so the boys were actually hassling the parents to kind of like, you know, let's start and get out there and do what we do. Is this just normal? And I think that's the lovely thing. Like for some young adults in the church, it's all a bit scary, it's a bit freaky. But for these kids, it's really normal because it's what we do. And we've been doing it since we've started. So that's cool. And I just wondered if Julie would come up for a minute. I had a brief conversation with Julie.
When I was a relatively new Christian in the church, I didn't really understand about all the things you can and can't do. And I was in charge of children's ministry. This was over 20 years ago. And I just thought, why can't we get the kids serving in the church and going out on mission? So we just did that for a number of years. And I did have a rule that the children had to be serving in our church before, and then perhaps come with us on a trip in our state to a country church or run a holiday club or take things out to drought people before I'd take them on an overseas trip. So a bit like you were saying before, the youngest we took away overseas, just to Fiji and Vanuatu, we had connections there, was 5, but their parent was on team. But we did take an 8-year-old girl over whose parents, my husband had taught her at school as a teacher, but the parents trusted us to take her. So and the children were mainly children and young people up to about 14, mainly involved in creative ministries, dance, drama, puppetry, presenting programs in schools, prayer, Bible readings. And some mission agencies have like a limit of 18 before some young people can go out on mission. And I had a parent write to me one time, her daughter really had a heart for mission. She was only 14 and she wasn't allowed to go on a team. Would we take her? And I did know the family, so we did. But another young girl who came with us to Vanuatu when she was probably 12, a wonderful heart for God and a real heart for children. She's now almost 30, and she and her husband have just last year gone over with OM to do some ministry overseas. And last year she just wrote me a little card and she just thanked my husband and I for giving her opportunities to serve when she was young, and that really gave her a heart, laid on her heart to serve now. And it's just a joy for us because we're actually supporting her on her mission work over there, and there's others like that too. So I think I really had a my understanding with the children was that they could make a difference no matter what age they were. And each year we'd have a whole term of in our Sunday school, our theme was mission, serving, using tear or compassion resources, just getting them thinking and going out to aged care homes and just getting them thinking beyond themselves. And children are capable of doing that. And I think if You can get children serving when they're young and giving them opportunities. They just grow up thinking that's a natural thing that you do as a Christian, and often it's easier to get the children involved in things and young people than it is some adults in the church as well. So I encourage you. Back then I just thought it was normal, and then I discovered a lot of people weren't doing it. But I mean, kids can do great things, young people, so they just need opportunities. Okay.
Thanks, Julie. And I'm sure that actually all of you have a story to share. And I want you to just think about that. And maybe, I don't know if we've got things we're meant to be talking about that we're probably going to be told, so correct me if I'm wrong, but in our home groups. But maybe there might be an opportunity just to, you know, to share in your home groups of an example you can think of where children have really been empowered and scaffolded and walked alongside. As disciple makers. So have a think about that, because we want to hear from each other, but not right now, because we're going to get us brainstorming again, and I might need our team to just kind of make sure we've got post-it notes distributed and so on. We want to have a look at, want you to go and feel free to go and get into one of these eight or seven groups for now. So wherever you feel like your interest is, and I want you just as a group to discuss and come up with ideas of how can we scaffold children to be disciple makers in these places. So when I've got like grandparents, so as grandparents, how could we help to like scaffold our children as our grandchildren as disciple makers? What could we do with them? And so just choose the sphere that you want to get involved in. We can just send you. Maybe I'll just say families will be here. Maybe you could chuck these around the room. Maybe grandparents if you're interested in that. So it's really just asking that one question. Didn't want to make it too hard tonight. We're all a bit tired and we've got full tummies. But what are there some things that we could do to help children be disciple makers in those places, or as grandparents, or in a small group? What are some ideas you can come up with? What do you already know is happening, but what are some new things, some plus ones? So I want you to discuss that, write on post-it notes. You can come and grab some paper, gather your chairs around the different topics. And then at the end, we'll have a feedback time of about 10 minutes where you can just give us, say, your best idea you've come up with.